And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Front End Nationwide. This is The Athletic, dedicated Blue Jackets podcast here in Portland with you on a Thursday afternoon. Overcast but warm in the capital city. Blue Jackets are on their way home from Southern California where, whew, what a game last night. Up 4-0. They blew a 4-0 lead because who else could do that? But then to their credit, they got it back together in the third period. They were saved by the second intermission last night. Blue Jackets 7-4 over Anaheim. They go 2 out of 3 on the California trip. They go 2 for 4 on the road trip altogether. Started in Ottawa. They came home after that. And they're back home Friday to Buffalo. That's not going to be an easy game. Maybe it's mental. There's some fatigue there, too. They played 3 and 4 in California. They fly home on a day off, and they're back at it again tomorrow. So curious to see how they play Friday and Nationwide against the Sabres. They also have a game on Sunday against the New York Rangers. Those are always fun games, of course, with Panarin back in town. So we got a lot to talk about. 2 weeks to the trade deadline. The trade deadline, of course, is March 8th. I get the feeling that I think the Blue Jackets could make a little noise, but I don't think it's going to be like it was last year at all. They just simply don't have the departing veterans to move like they did last year. We can talk about the trade deadline. We can talk about John Davidson taking over the GM duties along with the rest of his staff. We can talk about the firing of Jarmo Kekäläinen. I know we had a special edition podcast last week about that, but if you still want to discuss that, there's plenty of meat on that bone. The outdoor game, of course, is coming a little more than a year from now. Blue Jackets, Red Wings in Ohio Stadium. Feels like we've been waiting for this for 20 years, and it will be a reality on March 1st, 2025. So let's talk Blue Jackets. You can send a text message. You can step to the stage and ask a question. We can go about it a couple of different ways. And let's start with the text messages. Andrew R. is first out of the hopper. Do you think we'll see the youth play a little more going forward? Andrew, I you know what? I honestly don't get that sense. I don't get that sense. I asked Pascal Vincent coming out of the trade deadline, after the All-Star break, if anything changed during the stretch drive. Does he turn this thing over to the kids, as many have wanted him to do? He said no. They're going to try to win every game. One thing I do think is going to be curtailed, it better be curtailed, is Boone Jenner's minutes. He played 26:42 against Ottawa. He played almost 23 minutes the next night. I didn't see where he ended up last night. Boone, it just seems like he's on the ice all the time anyways, because he's such a noticeable and competitive player. What did he play last night? Hold with me, please. Boone played 20:03. Getting up there. My thing has been like, you're out of it, right? You're 16, 18 points out of the playoffs. As much as you want to win every game, I get that. This is not the tank that last year was. I don't see the point of risking Boone Jenner, who has had issues with his back throughout his career, including 2 seasons that ended prematurely with back issues. I just don't see driving that guy into the ground to try to compete and win a game in Ottawa, which he never trailed or mostly trailed and lost 6-3. That one just did not make a ton of sense to me, especially when you've got guys like Sillinger come a long way this year by your own admission. Let's see him in that setting. Voronkov looks like he can be a center in the National Hockey League. Let's get him even more faceoffs. He's been really good on the dot. I think Pascal Vincent sees more important than those guys getting experience no matter what. I think he sees the importance in trying to win every game and creating a competitive environment here. So I don't think we're going to see more of the youth. Now, I do think on the other side of the trade deadline, you could well see some guys come up from Cleveland. We'll also find out on that day who's going down to Cleveland, or at least who can go down to Cleveland for the playoffs when they, you know, create their clear list of the AHL. I would suspect, I think they've even said that Juracek is going to play in the playoffs for Cleveland. I think Fantilli is an interesting question. I would not have thought him a possible AHL guy before he got injured and missed. He's going to miss 4, 5, 6 weeks of the season. They do expect him to be back this year, but might he go to Cleveland to continue playing? I think that could be offered to him, but we'll see. So does Trey Fitz-Wilanski come up? Does Carson Meyer, who's got 20 goals down there this year for Cleveland, does he come up? I'd be fine with them clearing out some depth forwards to create some space. I feel like this is something that's needed to be done all year. We'll see what they get done at the trade deadline, but I don't think they're going to just turn it over to the youth, as many have suggested. Martin L. says, what do you make of Kent and Kirill scuffling a bit over the last month? Also, is there any update on Fantilli? So Johnson's gone 16 games without a goal. Marchenko has slowed down, but not a ton. I think goal scorers go into these funks. I'm not that concerned about him. It hasn't been a great season for Kent Johnson, let's be honest. I think he's probably on the whole backpedaled from last year. I still think he's a hell of a prospect. He's going to be a really good player in this game. I think a lot of it's youth. It's, the role that they're being asked to play. Some nights, from one night to the next, they go from 18 minutes to 12. But Johnson last night played 10 minutes and 34 seconds. No shots on goal. Had 2 hits. You're 10:34. I mean, you can be productive in no matter what, but that's not a huge opportunity. And I feel like the 91-4-17 line, which has played the last couple of games, has become the line where they're not quite sure what to do with these guys. So let's put them here. As for an update on Fantilli, haven't gotten an update lately. He was in Ann Arbor for a while, in Toronto for a while, rehabbing. I'm not sure if he's back in Columbus or not. But I have not heard an update, either a setback or any indication that he could be ahead of schedule. Hey, Aaron, hope you're well. Can you give any updates on prospects such as Matejchuk, Dumé, Malatesta, and others? Trying to be positive about the future. I feel you, Austin. So Matejchuk continues to get rave reviews. He played great at the World Junior, which is about the best competition you can get for a junior player. He almost made this team out of camp this year. I think he's going to get strong consideration for it next year. In 40 games with Moose Jaw this year, he's got 13-43-56. So way above a point a game. He's already matched his career goal high, and he is closing in on a points record, too. He's been very consistent for a junior player. 64 points in 21-22, 65 points in 22-23. And he's going to end up right around there, if not a little higher, even though he's played fewer games this year. You're going to see Matejchuk maybe late this season if Moose Jaw gets bounced from the Western Hockey League playoffs in enough time. He could come here. He could come to Cleveland. I think he continues to play in Cleveland if he can, if they're done early enough. But he is definitely a guy you're going to see in Columbus sooner rather than later. Dumé is in Columbus recovering. John Davison the other day telling me that he's on schedule and that when the Blue Jackets get back in town today, that Mike Vogt will catch up with Dumé, see where he's at. He'll go back to Halifax to help the Mooseheads finish that season. And when that when their season, just like Matejchuk, when Matejchuk's done with Moose Jaw, he'll be able to join or start his pro career. Same with Dume. So that'll either be Cleveland or Columbus. Malatesta has been in with AHL Cleveland all year. He has been a really good player for them. And if you understand how they're doing things in Cleveland, you're not playing every night unless you're one of the big dogs, Fix Wolanski. So Malatesta's been in and out. He was healthy scratch in back-to-back games last week. Came back into the lineup and drew rave reviews. Now, he's not in the AHL what he was in the Q, which that shouldn't surprise you. Last year in the Q, he had 66 points, including 37 goals in 55 games. With Cleveland, he's got 11, 8, 19 in 42 games, playing mostly a third or fourth line role. He also has 56 penalty minutes, which I believe is tops on the team. If not tops on the team, it's close. Let's see here. No, he's third on the team. Carson Meyer, 63. Billy Sweezy, 58. James Malatesta, 56. I'm a big Malatesta guy. Now, he is 5'9", 190. He's built like a brick shit house, and he's tough. But there, he's going to have to overcome that size disadvantage, if you will. But I see him as a third or fourth line fixture in Columbus in the very near future. He's actually one of my favorite players to watch. I love the way the kid's built. I mean, he's composed. All that he brings. He reminds me of a, I'm not saying he's going to score 500 and some goals as Brind'Amour did. How many goals did Rod Brind'Amour have? But I he's built like him, like Rod Brind'Amour. And he's a tough dude. Like, nobody's in better shape. Hey, 452 goals. I'll take the under for Malatesta. I'll take the under on 1,454 games, too. But Malatesta's a heck of a prospect for them. Randy O says, what are your thoughts on Severson's play and his contract? You know what? It's not been a great year. That deal is not off to a great start. 8 years scares the hell out of me. But I also think you hear this a lot, that the first year of free agency for some players is second only to their first year in the NHL together. It's just a weird thing, especially when you're a big ticket player who's not used to being a big ticket player. You almost create an unrealistic expectation of what you need to do to justify this contract, when all you really need to do is be who you've always been. I think Severson's had a tough time. I know he got off to a tough start in Columbus. And I think Provorov's been okay too, but he's had a lot of turnovers too that are somewhat uncharacteristic or certainly not expected of a guy that's a top four regular. The more I talk to people, the less it seems likely that Provorov gets moved at the trade deadline. John Davidson saying emphatically that he wants Matejchuk to come to camp next year, needing to earn a spot. That suggests that Provorov is not going anywhere. But I think they'll listen to offers and they may make a move on him. But they're going to have Severson for a while, with 7 years after this one. That's a lot. It's a lot. I don't really see any point in getting stressed about what the final few years of that are going to be until you get there. But I think he's one of the guys here who will be better next year with a year under his belt, knowing what to expect, perhaps having a regular playing partner for the end of the year. He's played with Provorov a lot towards the end of the season. He could see some time with Matejchuk next year, though. And, you know, Yurecek, if Boqvist fits next to Werenski, and it's starting to look like he does, then whose spot does Yurecek take? Because he's coming. James J. says, do you think the massive amount of blown leads this season is mental? Conditioning, game time coaching, can't confirm offhand, but it feels like we could be contending for the postseason with all these blown leads. I think it's mostly mental. I think this is a I'll say it bluntly, a young, inexperienced team with poor leadership. How's that? Poor leadership at the top of its food chain. So Boone Jenner, I got no beef with Boone. I think I keep hearing that Gaudreau is becoming more and more of a leader. That's a really good sign. That's a hard thing for somebody on the outside of the room. Even if you go into the room for interviews, you don't get a feel for those sort of things. But that's what people are telling us, that Gaudreau is starting to take on a bigger part of that. That's a good sign. And you know what? You talk to I learned as much. I love stories when the writer learns as much as you hope the reader does. Talking to Bruce Boudreau and Ken Hitchcock, two guys that have coached thousands of NHL games. Have you been through this before? And both of them say, oh, absolutely. It's the process of a young team. It hurts like hell, but you got to go through it. When does it end? Well, it ends when people decide that they're sick and tired of doing this and they're not going to put up with it anymore. And it ends when the young guys who are still at the point of their careers where they acquiesce to the older guys, when they reach a point where they say, get out of the way, you're not doing it right, that's when the team starts to take off. Last night is both a negative, blowing a 4-goal lead. I mean, you saw the spell that came over them at the end of the second period. They couldn't move. They were frozen. That's all mental. But I think it's a really good sign that they got into the room and they weren't under that same spell when they came out for the third. It's almost like the second never even happened. I think I wrote that line exactly in the story today. They put it behind them and they were the better team clearly in the third period. That's progress. They've also had some games. It's like a plane that lands safely. Nobody write the story, and there are no news reports about the plane that landed safely. Only when there's an emergency landing somewhere, or only when there's a crash. They've had some games where they have closed it out. They've closed it out. And so to me, there's been some progress there. And you know what? I also come at it from this way. Get all this crap out of the way. Learn these hard lessons. This to me is the argument for playing the young players. Like, let's see what they got. Don't let them get overwhelmed by the situation, of course, but use this is the time. This is what you're given. This is your gift from the league for being so bad and not in the playoffs, is these games have very little meaning. So find another meaning for them. Like, put these games to work. We're going to take a couple more text messages, and then we'll head over to Eric S. So Eric S., you are on stage. Stay put, and we will get to you. Have seen some talk about Ken Holland and Mark Hunter as potential new president and GM candidates. Any thoughts on either of them? I think both would absolutely get interviews. Ken Holland is still employed by Edmonton. If he's on his way out and he still wishes to work, I think Ken Holland would have a lot of people that want to talk to him. Ken Holland is a good, good man. Mark Hunter is a super competitive fellow, part of the renowned Hunter clan. Absolutely, you interview that guy. I don't know what the interviews would be like. I mean, you would want, they keep talking about wanting someone who's been in the chair before. I think sometimes a combination of people. Now, we don't know that they're looking for a president. No one has said they're looking for a president. You're asking if JD is hiring his potential successor. That's not been made clear to me. But I think they have to start thinking, not just with 24-25 in mind, but the future in mind. Where is this going? The other thing they need to consider, too, is what do you do with Rick Nash if he aspires to be president of your organization? What is the timeline? Has anyone talked about a timeline for this? All very interesting, but even if you're not hiring for both chairs right now, I'm sure a future idea of what that's going to look like will factor into this. Mark Hunter's a very interesting cat. He's been up for some other jobs as well. If he wants to be a GM in the NHL, eventually he's going to get there. You know that. One thing I do think is great for the Blue Jackets right now to be in this spot And I think it's one of the reasons that they in hindsight, that they acted quickly on, not quickly, sooner rather than later on Kekalainen, is there are some really good candidates out there. Really good candidates. And they'd like to get a jump on that. Is that Hunter? Are there other players, people not in the game right now, or guys who have a capacity with an NHL team that they can still interview as the season's going on? I think, you know, Matthew Darche has been mentioned as a candidate, really good candidate. Hunter, of course, makes sense. Hunter was not on our list of the initials. Again, that list was not meant to be authoritative. It was just an idea of what's out there, what's bopping around. But Hunter does make a ton of sense. And there are others. I think they're going to get a really qualified, bright person. And I know people have taken a giggle at this, too, that people actually want this job. It's more than that. I think people see this as a really attractive situation for multiple reasons. And I know lots of people like to bang on the ownership, absentee ownership, we call it as you will. I think that is seen, and Jarmo Kekalainen, I think, would confirm this as one of the attractions of the job. Like, the owner wants answers. He wants to know what's coming and what you're planning to do. But he's not coming down saying, hey, why don't you play that Danforth guy more? Or, hey, we're going to take this guy in the draft. I don't care what your scouts have said. And a lot of owners do meddle like that. McConnell does not do that. He turns it over to the hockey people, and they kind of live on their own, which I think certainly adds. And I have GMs tell me all the time about certain relationships in the league between the GM and the owner that are just unbelievable and make the job far less enjoyable. It's not like that here. That coupled with the young talent that's been underway, basically you've had a GM that has endured 3 years of rebuilding, and now you're coming in at that point of the process. That's a good spot to land in. And I think there's a lot of people who have experience in Columbus, either as players or as managers, or have been here enough as players or with other teams, who see this as a sleeping jewel in the I mean, it's going to sound like I'm patronizing, and I'm not. This team has more fan support than it has deserved. And there's a sense among a lot of people, I share this, that they've been here 24 years. They've won one playoff series. This market, as great as it is by many measures, it still has not been realized in that it has not been taken on a run like Minnesota took. Like, you have to, I mean, Minnesota knows hockey, but you built an entire generation of Wild fans with them making the Western Conference Finals for the third year. Seattle has taken their team already on a run last year. Vegas has won a cup already. Nashville has had long runs in the playoffs. So many of the newer markets have given their fans a 2 month or a 6 week run in the springtime that just absolutely transfixes the city and builds a generation of fans. Now, there are still people here who look at that Tampa Bay series. It's the high water mark of the franchise. They were completely thrilled. And that is the memory of a lifetime for them. But you would pick up even more people if they beat Boston in the second round, if they make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. Holy smokes. All right, we're going to get one more text question from Tim B, and then we're going to Eric S. So, Eric, be ready. Tim B says, is JD just a spokesman as a GM? Every comment he makes it seem it's going to be a very quiet deadline. Talking about how they won't clear a spot for Juracek or Mateja. Well, Tim, yeah, I take him at his word. I mean, I don't know if you mean a spokesman as a derogatory. I don't think he's just saying things. So I think Provorov is available if the price is right, but I don't think they go into the trade deadline. I know they don't go into the trade deadline saying we need to move Provorov because Matejchuk's coming. If it happens, it happens. And they've got other players that can play on the left side. But I think that's how that's going to be. They did not clear a spot for Juracek. Now, Boqvist has elevated to the top pair with Werenski, but Severson is parked in the number two spot on the right side. And Good Branson's got two more years on the right side, on the third pair. So I don't know. That's why people think the Boakvist could be had too. But it's pretty clear that this group does not feel that Juracek is ready just yet. So that's what I would say. Let's go to the stage. Eric S., you are on.
Eric S., you are on.
Please go ahead.
Please go ahead.
Hey, Aaron. Hope all is well. Thanks for doing these.
Of course.
Just had a question on, it's been a week since Jarmo was fired, and was just sort of curious if you've heard anything or where you kind of get the sense of where things might go in this kind of interim period with Elvis's trade request. We know Juracek has made comments, voicing his displeasure about being sent back and forth to Cleveland, kind of those situations of in this interim period with JD taking over, where those might go to this, the not a trade request still stand with Elvis, that kind of thing. And would those kind of situations be looked at for a new GM hire whenever that takes place later on in this timeline?
Yeah. So the Leakins situation is messy. And he says he didn't ask for it. Then he says he did ask for it. And then immediately he makes it clear that they spoke. Actually told people that he asked for a trade. But he actually didn't ask for a trade. Let's be honest. Both sides have decided that a change of scenery is best for Elvis personally. And I can't say I disagree. That doesn't mean you can just want to. I think the new GM will be asked that question. It could be one of the early challenges on the job. It could be that Elvis starts to get his ass off and sticks. I mean, possible. But I think the plan right now, if they got a good offer for Elvis, would be to move him along. Now, you need a goalie. You would absolutely need a goalie. And I don't think they think Jack Greaves is ready yet. But it is, it's now a question mark on the roster where I don't think they wanted or expected it to be. The Juracek situation, I think moving Jarmo out and somebody else in, even though I don't think John Davidson feels differently than Kekalainen did about the situation with Juracek. I do think if JD were healthy and involved day to day, that maybe the get a place conversation with Juracek would not have occurred. Certainly not 4 days before they sent him back to the minors. I think things would have been handled differently, but I don't think he's completely opposed to Juracek being in the minors. I know Pascal Vincent is not. He believes that's where he should be right now. So the new GM is going to have, full control of the roster. That's how they do things here. And so some guys who would be considered fixtures may be immediately considered expendable by the new guy. That's kind of the excitement of having new eyes on the thing. And some of this will be sorted out in the interview process too. In other words, if a guy comes in and says, trade Sillinger, trade Marchenko, trade Chinnikov, get rid of Voronkov, I don't see Johnson as a prospect, then, that could be a major turnoff to him even getting the job. But whoever comes in is going to have his own opinions and his own way of doing things and his own idea of how a team should be built. So that which we think we have a good grip on right now will be loosened for sure. So thanks for the question. Eric, we'll go back to the text line. El Deuterino is with us. That's a beautiful. Tell your parents thanks for the great name. Ever wonder what the season would have looked like if the Babcock situation didn't unfold and he was still the head coach? Thoughts on that? And here, do the players have any input on coaching? And if so, what do you think they are saying behind closed doors to management regarding Vincent? So can I call you dude? I think the Babcock thing was a absolute blessing when it happened. I know it was disruptive. I know nobody liked it. But I can't imagine if he thought that was acceptable behavior. I can't imagine what other shit would have gone on behind the scenes and how ugly it would have gotten. Or if management would have listened to the players' protests in the wake of those incidents and ignored it, what kind of mutiny you might have had by now. They had to act. They're lucky it happened when it did, as messy as it was, as ugly as the timing was. I don't think the players have exit meetings. I don't think it is evaluate your coach. I think if a player has an issue with how he's coached, he can either go to the coach himself. If that finds no remedy, he can certainly speak to his agent or speak directly to the GM. There are ways, but I don't think they're looking for Yelp reviews of the coach. I would say. I do think the new GM is going to have to make a decision, though. Like, do you see the progress under Pascal Vincent? Do you agree with his handling, his approach, all those things? And if the new GM is looking for a new coach, and that's something that needs to be considered by the people hiring him, if they want to go down that path or not. So that's what I would say. We'll go about 15 more minutes here. Bobby B says, hey, Porty, two semi-related questions. First, do you have a sense of how CBJ prospects, mainly thinking the Cleveland guys like Canasco, Svazil, Koolemans, etc., are viewed by other teams? Do they have trade value, or are they not quite there in terms of NHL value? Second, personally, I feel if a trade similar to the PLD trade between LA and the Jets last year is something that would interest the Jackets, where they are acquiring a top player and giving up a few lesser pieces. Would you have any sense on some of the top guys that could be available this summer? Well, that's a tough one. And a trade that could make sense. Let me get to the first part, and I'll reconsider the second. How are Svazil, Koolemans, Canasco rated? So every team would have been into Cleveland to see these guys. Either, I shouldn't say into Cleveland, at some place along the NHL trail or AHL trail to see these guys. And they've played a lot of games the last couple of years in the A. I think all of these are seen as interesting prospects, but flawed prospects in their own way. Svazil, can he get bigger, stronger, and defend better? Koolemans, can he defend better? There's some warts to these guys, which is why they're in Cleveland right now. I do think they see their way to the NHL eventually, though. But I think from team to team, you may have a wild range for players like this of what is expected or what their ceiling is from team to team. Now, keep in mind, people would have been checking out Koolemans at Wisconsin. They would have seen Svazil in Regina. They would have seen how he played with Connor Bedard in Regina and played very well. Now, that sounds like a super easy thing. It's not necessarily easy at the junior level for a defenseman to be able to keep pace with a player like that. Svazil did it. Bedard loved him. That's a pretty good line on your resume there. So at this point, I don't think these guys are the main course of a trade. But I do think they are sweeteners. In other words, if the Blue Jackets and what other team reach a trade, but the Blue Jackets have to give a little bit more to balance this out, and that team in its scouting reports loves Koolemans, Canasco, Svazil, as you said, then that's the kind of sweetener you throw in. I don't think you give them away, certainly, but if they are what is required to get a deal done, and you think of them in a certain way, in other words, not a bona fide for sure top six, then that they become sweeteners. I think that's possible. To your second thought, a PLD trade between LA and the Jets. So the Jets, you're talking the Kings moved multiple pieces for Pierre-Luc Dubois. I think you're saying the Blue Jackets come at this from the Kings' perspective and trade for a player of that magnitude. I don't know that he's available. I doubt that he is. But one guy that I have thought would look really good in the Union Blue
because of his size, because of the way that he plays, is Lawson Crouse. 20-goal, 25-goal scorer. He's going to approach mid-25s again this year. Not a huge offensive talent, but a big dude. And not a huge PIMS guy, but has the makings of a power forward. I don't think they have enough of that. They're small on the wings. And you know what? As Kent Johnson matures, as he becomes a winger, he's still going to be on the light side. If you think about this team, can they have that many players on the light side? What if Dumais makes it? Can you possibly have Gaudreau, Johnson, and Dumais as three of your top four or six wingers? I think you'd want some size there. I'm not averse to a trade like that, but I'd want it to be a young guy with term remaining. So just a thought. We have William E. on the stage. William, we're going to get to you in just a minute. Let's get to another text question. David J. says, why is the CBJ defense so bad? I know it's a combination of things, but what are the main culprits? Talent, experience, systems, or coaching? We've really fallen off the cliff since Brad Shaw left, so it seems to me that it leans more towards coaching and symptoms or systems. I think it leads towards personnel as well. Seth Jones is not here. Seth Jones was a hell of a player. The Blue Jackets had a really good blue line for a couple of years, and they've just been – this has been patchwork for a while now. Provorov and Severson have been okay. I don't think this is a very smart defensive team forward-wise. I think that comes from their youth and experience. You've got a lot of offensive-leaning forwards that are just learning how to defend. The goaltending's been a little bit better this year. Elvis has for sure been better. But Daniil Tarasov was pretty good last night, especially in the third period after getting his face raked. But he's got an .881 save percentage. He's not been great. this has not been a good defensive club. I think too often we put that just on the defenseman, when that's not fair. I don't think this is a very good defensive club in terms of forwards either. And it's something they've got to – maybe it comes with maturity and age. Maybe it comes with smarts. It's just – it's a team that takes a lot of risks. And early in the season, I think when most of the damage was done, they spent a lot of time in their own zone and really got hemmed in a lot. I think you're seeing less of that now, although it still happens against really good teams. So, you know, having the puck, possessing the puck is the best way to defend sometimes. Because if the other team doesn't have it, they can't score.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
William E., you are on the Front and Nationwide podcast. Welcome to the show. Go ahead, please.
Do you think we're a little light when it comes to goaltending prospects?
Hey, William. Well, I mean, I think it depends on how you see Jet Greaves. If you think of him as a prospect, I feel a whole lot better about the situation. It depends on how you feel about Sergei Ivanov, too. Not a big guy, but he's having a really good year in Russia. Does he care to come over? Good question. When can he come over? That's a good question. He is, I think he should be considered a prospect. He's got like 29 on a not good team. So yeah, I think Greaves. I think you'd like to have some more depth there, perhaps somebody that could share the net with Greaves. And Cleveland is considered an NHL prospect. I don't think Pavel Kayan is that. But yeah, I'm looking at Sergei Ivanov's record. He's got a 929 save percentage, and he's only 8-16-3. That tells you how bad that team struggled. But he's been really good. So I think they're okay. Here's been my experience or my opinion, William. I feel like every year at the draft, in the later rounds, you don't fall in love with a goalie in the early rounds. I think you take one in the later rounds because these guys are even more a mystery than the other places on the ice. And Ivanov was a fifth-round pick of the Blue Jackets in 2022, coming off a year where he had a 957 save percentage in the KHL, the big league. Played most of it in the minors that year. They take a bit of a flyer on him. He's 5'10", 156. That's not the prototypical goalie these days, but it looks like he can play. See where it goes. I would suspect part of the challenge this offseason is going to be figuring out that goaltending position because they're kind of locked into an uncomfortable situation right now if they plan to be a good team next year.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure, William. Sure.
Last time the Cleveland was this good, we had Bjorkstrand and Jourinski all come up. Should we be excited that Cleveland's this good, meaning that we, you know, in a year or two, we're going to be getting the fruits of that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I would say this, and not to disparage the players that are there now, I think that team back then in 2016, when you think about Bjorkstrand, Josh Anderson, Korpisalo, Forsberg, who else am I forgetting? Wierenski. They had some big-time NHL prospects on that team. I think there's some really good players on this team, this Cleveland team. But as for big-time NHL prospects, most of those guys are in the NHL right now. I'm talking the top six forwards, top four defensemen. Most of those guys are in Columbus. There's some guys who could very well play their way to the big leagues. Walansky, Christensen, now they're, they're of an age, 24 and 23. Walansky's 24, Christensen 23. Where typically, if you're going to see it, you've seen it by now. That age is great in the American Hockey League. In terms of them being the next wave of talent, we shall see. Carson Meyer's 26. I don't think most people see him as a top six game changer. Del Belbaluz has had a pretty solid first year pro. Can he define himself as a third or fourth line guy? Perhaps. I go back to Malatesta. I think he's a player. I think he's going to be a player. Svezil's the same way. I don't think there's top end Dell prospect talent in Cleveland now as there was in 2016 when they won it. But I think it's probably a more veteran-laden team. You've got guys like Gaunce, Brandon Gaunce, who's 29. Brandon Gaunce is 29 years old. That's an established AHL player. And they've got a bunch of these guys, 25, 27. Alex Whelan, they just signed, is 26. Stefan Matteau, if he gets back into the lineup and healthy, is 29. So these aren't NHL prospects, but they're proven AHL players. So I think it's probably different, William, in that way. Thanks for the questions. We'll go back to the text line. Got a few more minutes here. Philip A. says, I know the PK went 4-for-4 last night, but it's been bad. Why do you think we aren't seeing more guys given opportunities as PKers? Would also help reduce Boone's time on ice for his back. Hey, Philip, I'm all for it. Let's go. Sillinger, Chinnikov. I mean, tell me Chinnikov couldn't be a scary dude on the penalty kill. Corrali, Texier. I'm all about those changes. We concur. Why not? Daniel S. says, considering Davidson was part of the Babcock hiring, Does the team have an official statement or position as to why they feel he is the right person to lead the GM search rather than hiring a search firm or something similar? Seems strange to give him another swing of this importance if they thought he was part of that last huge mistake. Fair point, Daniel. I would counter with this. If you thought that the Babcock hiring was so egregious, I'm not saying you, I'm saying if you're the owner and you feel it was so egregious that this person should not be allowed to make future big decisions, then you would have fired him right at that moment. Like, you know, it's similar to why let Yarmo stick around if you're not going to abide the things that his vision for how to get this team out of it. Why stick around for that? They still believe in John Davidson. They still trust John Davidson. Absolutely, John Davidson wanted Mike Babcock to be the coach here, thought he was the right hire. That's a huge, huge mistake by everyone involved. It changes the fact that they still, ownership here still trusts Davidson fully. Patrick R. says, what percentage of AHL players make the NHL? That is a good question. A couple of different ways to look at that. If you're talking about, I think the better way to look at it is how many of the current NHL players came up through the AHL? Because there's so many guys that come into the AHL for a cup of coffee up from the East Coast League that number would be distorted pretty severely. I mean, you could run like guys who have played 100 or more games in the AHL. How likely are they to get an NHL shot? But it's an interesting metric. As the National Hockey League opens its 23-24 season, this comes from the AHL, the American Hockey League is proud to have 583 graduates across the NHL's 32 opening day active roster, making up more than 82% of the NHL's initial player pool to begin this campaign. So there you go. 82% is the number of players at the start of this NHL season who came up through the American Hockey League or played there at least a bit. All right, Patrick, thank you so much for the question. We have one more from Matt B. Wheeler is counting down prospect pools and CBJ seem to be top eight. Oh, they're top eight, baby. Any spoiler how high we are? Top three? Matt, I am not at liberty to discuss that. Scott Wheeler is going to be on the pod the week that the Blue Jackets are published as their prospect pool. He hasn't said this, but if we blow the surprise, Wheels is not doing the podcast. Like his agent, his representation will say, not happening. You ruined the surprise. So we'll have to wait to see. They are in the top eight. And that's impressive because some guys have graduated from last year. It's a great series, and Scott deserves a ton of credit. He and Corey Promen do incredible work on the prospect side. But this is Wheels' big time of the year, where every team gets a real hard look at who they've got coming. And it's the one thing as a Blue Jackets fan you can bank on, or you've been taught to bank on. They do have a lot of prospects. The future is fairly bright. Now, can they keep it together? That is the question, and that is perhaps why they made a GM change. Thanks, everyone, for being with us. Really appreciate it. Thanks for the questions, both on stage and via text. We'll be back next week. The trade deadline is 2 weeks away. Looking forward to, I'm not sure what it'll be, but I don't think it's going to be a big deal, but we'll see. Thanks for being with us, and we'll talk to you very soon.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.